Ms. Harrell, whenever you're ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Your Honor, Your Honors, we're here today. This is an employment matter. I guess it's somewhat of a change of pace from the first two matters. I'm here representing the petitioner, Ms. Denise Brent. She was terminated from her employment with the Federal Correctional Institution in Yazoo City, Mississippi. And we're here appealing her removal from that position. The basis of our appeal, or the basic, the main, one of the arguments on our appeal, is that the agency has engaged in disparate treatment with respect to the penalties that have been imposed on past employees for the activity that Ms. Brent was accused of engaging in or in her employment. The record would indicate that within the two-year period prior to Ms. Brent's termination for the same offenses, the agency had counted at least two employees that were accused of similar instances or incidents. One employee in particular was accused of three violations of agency work rules that were somewhat similar, and we would argue
this is the employee whose termination letter is found at pages 24 through 26 of your brief appendix.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That employee is that employee was I believe the activity that she engaged in was sort of in a time frame within the same temporal time frame as what Ms. Brent engaged in, and that employee was accused of maybe four or at least three violations of work rules that were somewhat similar to what Ms. Brent had engaged in, which was an inappropriate relationship or the appearance of an inappropriate relationship with an inmate, and also this employee, I believe, was also accused of providing agency documents to the inmate. But the difference here is this employee, engaged in repeated violations of this work rule, even though this employee had been advised, I believe in March of 2002 or 2003, not to have contact with this inmate. And a very short time later, in April of the same year, April 4 and 5, this employee had the same, went against the direct order or direct directions of, I believe it was the assistant warden, or at least one of her supervisors, that she refrained from contacting this employee. And
the evidence, though, as I read it, doesn't show that these employees were in the same unit with the same supervisors engaged in substantially similar conduct consistent with the Wendt decision.
Well, they were not in the same unit with the same supervisor, and the person that making the proposal was different.
Doesn't that present a problem for your argument?
In this instance, Your Honor, the decision maker, the final decision maker in this instance is the warden. I mean, these were just the proposals. The person that proposed the disciplinary action for this employee was different. That's true. But the person who actually made the decision was the warden. So in each instance, we did have the actual same decision maker, even though we had different people proposing what disciplinary action should be taken. And we would also like to point out that another part of our argument, I think something that's critical, I consider critical, is that Ms. Brent was the first person that there was a proposed removal for this type of activity. I mean, the prior two instances, the employee that we're talking about here was the proposal was, I believe, a 30-day suspension that was mitigated to a 21-day suspension. That was reduced to a 21-day suspension. I think the employee was actually imposed a 21-day suspension. And the other employee, who only engaged in one incident, but I think the initial proposal of discipline was for 15 days, I believe the record reflect, and that was reduced down to maybe 10 days. So Ms. Brin is the only one at the initial start-off point, the starting point, was removal. And that had never been recommended before. And of course, there was throughout the process, the proposal was not mitigated, so she was removed. And we are just can't understand why. We're under the arguing to the court that if an employee has engaged in this type of activity, improper contact with an inmate, in a short period of time like that, after a direct order, on at least two occasions, a direct order that this type of contact stop, and violates that rule, and still there was no proposal of removal, and Ms. Brent got proposal of removal after one incident, and also we see an inconsistency in considering whether these employees are capable of repeating this activity or are capable of rehabilitation. I mean, an employee that would do this type of activity after a direct order from the supervisor on more than one occasion would do the same activity, we can't understand why that employee would have would be considered to have more potential for rehabilitation and would be allowed to keep their job than an employee who engaged in she considered an ambiguous incident. I mean, there's no evidence that she's never stated that she knew who had left this particular instrument or package for her at the hotel. I mean, this is a small town, Yazoo City, Mississippi. She lives there. She has relatives there. She has friends there. And she has, you know, other people who work with the agency that stay at that same hotel sometimes. And there's nothing, so there would be nothing to absolutely say that this particular a package that she received on that particular day was something that would be connected to her job, because she was off duty when she received the package.
But with respect to the facts, though, I think the administrative judge found that did not credit her version.
That's correct. The administrative judge
did not. In light
of
the testimony from the hotel clerk.
Right, did not credit her her version of, did not credit my client's version of the testimony. But that still, the reason I was bringing that, was going into that, is because I think that goes back to the potential for rehabilitation. Even though the arbitrator did not credit her version of it, I mean, even though her testimony did indicate there was some question there or some ambiguity there as to what was going on here at the hotel or who left this. It was not like the other incident where there was a direct order on more than one occasion to not have contact with an inmate. And this particular employee knew she was improperly contacting an inmate on more than one occasion, knowingly had improper contact with an inmate after she had been advised of actually being directly ordered not to do it. Whereas my client did not knowingly make improper contact, with the inmate is what we were saying, in the sense that there was no, her testimony, of course, was that she did not know who left the package there, and since it was off duty, she didn't even give it any consideration. Since it was something small, she didn't consider it something, not necessarily consider the package monumental, but didn't consider the incident itself monumental.
But Ms. Harrell, you're arguing evidence, and I don't think we can really review the evidence as such. I think it's a legal issue that you have to present to us as to where the board is wrong or abused its discretion and the aspect of the removal. I think we need to get to that point where you can tell us exactly where the legal errors were committed by the board.
Yes, sir. And that goes to the we were talking about the comparative nature of the employees. During the hearing, the arbitrator made a finding that the employees were not similar. Well, the evidence, but the arbitrator didn't give any facts to support that. But the arbitrator's finding was that the employees were not similarly situated. And then the arbitrator went on to make the statement that, there was no disparate, I think she used the phrase disparate impact, it meant disparate treatment. So what we're saying is then the board went on to say that there was not enough evidence to show that the employees, whether they were similarly situated or not. So we don't see how the arbitrator can find that they were not similarly situated. But then the board says, well, we don't have enough evidence to find that they're similarly situated or they're not similarly situated, and then, you know, find that there's, so there's no evidence that they're similarly situated.
But that was your burden, was it not, to come forth with evidence to support your position that there was disparate treatment?
It was, and the evidence that we presented was evidence that was obtained from the requested evidence from the agency. The agency has the evidence. I mean, the, you know, employees don't have the documents and don't have personnel files. The agency had the evidence, and they were requested to provide the evidence. They did provide the evidence, but it was provided the day before the, well, it was provided, I'm not sure if this evidence was provided the day before the hearing, but we presented the evidence that was presented provided by the agency was presented to the arbitrator. And also, on the burden, we would also argue that as far as the Douglas factors, we think the agency has some burden to show that their penalties are consistent. And we think that if they didn't provide enough information to show whether these employees were similarly situated or not, that they have not carried their burden in showing that the termination or the removal was consistent and complied with all of the Douglas factors, because we would argue that they have some burden there. And, Your Honor, I mentioned my rebuttal term.
We'll save it for you then, if you want to. Or you can use it now, or you can save it if you
want.
Yeah,
I was going to say I would just stop at about the, when it gets to at about three. I can stop now and just stop.
Very well.
Unless you have other questions for me, I'm sorry.
I think, why don't we save the rest of your time for rebuttal then?
Thank you.
Ms. Moore.
May it please the Court, we respectfully request that the Court affirm the decision of the MSPB. The Board correctly upheld the agency's removal of Ms. Brent from her position as employee specialist. Ms. Brent asserts that the penalty of removal was inconsistent with penalties imposed on past employees who committed offenses similar to hers. The offenses were not similar. Specifically, the one employee that Ms. Brent points out as being similar or having engaged in similar misconduct, that employee's conduct was not similar to that of Ms. Brent's. The proposal letter for the suspension for that employee is contained in the petitioner's appendix. And in that letter, the acting controller describes the employee's conduct or alleged conduct. And that employee allegedly an inmate asked that.
You're talking about the 24 through 26 of the blue appendix letter?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that employee allegedly read letters to an inmate that that inmate had received from a female friend, and also glued or taped inserts into the cards of these letters so they wouldn't get lost. That is conduct completely different than that at issue here. Here, petitioner initiated action to communicate with an inmate's family member in off-duty hours on a Sunday when she wasn't working. She initiated the contact of going to the hotel to pick up a package left by that inmate's family member, the sister, and she did not report either the communication or the receipt of the gift or what was in the package to her superiors at the Federal Correction Institute. And that's completely different conduct than that of the employee at issue. And thus, the conduct is not similar at all.
Well, what about the fact that the employee was just reprimanded and suspended for a period of time and in fact released three government memorandums to an inmate? I would think that would be a pretty heavy problem when you start releasing government documents to inmates. That's part of the statement that's included on page 24 of the appendix in that letter showing employee number 8.
Apparently, the official government documents were something that the employee had written on a government letterhead and had given to the inmate.
How do we know
that?
Now,
that's in the arbitration hearing transcript. That's actually not part of this record, but either way, Your Honors, the conduct is completely different. It's not the same. It's not comparable. It's not similar. Here you have an employee who has taken the initiative to communicate with an inmate's family member, taken the initiative to pick up a package left by an inmate's family member, and has not reported that to the superiors. It's completely different conduct.
But you don't believe that giving government documents or memorandum to an inmate is egregious conduct also?
It is egregious conduct.
Just as egregious as the other?
But it's not similar conduct. And that's the element, is similar conduct. Here, this court in the Baker case held that other employees of the Social Security Administration, who, like the petitioner in that case, had accepted gratuities. In other words, the same misconduct, general term of misconduct. They had all accepted gratuities improperly. That was not held to be similar conduct in the Baker case. They hadn't gone the step further, as did the petitioner, in releasing government information to a subcontractor. So even though the term accepting gratuities was the same for the petitioner and the alleged comparators, this court held that the conduct was not similar conduct.
Well, that's an easy call. There's a difference even in the criminal code between gratuities, acceptance, and bribery. Bribery is a serious felony. Gratuities is, I think, even that carries a smaller penalty. So that's not a toughie. Now, I have a problem with, more generally, if we can take a step back from the particulars of this case, that I have difficulty in understanding exactly what we should do with disparate penalty-type claims. We see them quite frequently. It's not clear to me. There are lots of settings in which penalties are disparate. The criminal setting is one. A judge or a group of judges may send its people to different amounts of time for essentially the same crime. And even though the sentencing guidelines were designed to try to reduce the extent of the disparity, it is typically not the case in that setting that somebody who gets a heavier penalty can say, well, somebody else got a lighter penalty, therefore my penalty is invalid. What is the... let me ask the question this way. Is there case law that says if we have penalties that are different, that are imposed on two different people for exactly the same conduct, that it is impermissible to sustain the heavier penalty?
Your Honor, I haven't seen such case law. The court looks at various factors
to determine whether
there's been disparate treatment.
Okay, but suppose there is. Suppose it's indisputable that person A, for reasons that are other than some prohibited reason, such as race or sex or whatever, but just because of the system can be sort of arbitrary sometimes, there are five people, all of whom do exactly the same thing. One of them gets a 14-day suspension, the other four get removal. Do the four people who got removed have a right under our law or under the board law to be reduced to a 14-day suspension because one of the five did get a 14-day suspension?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. Assuming that the conduct is similar or exactly the same,
hypothetically it's identical.
If it's identical, there could be other circumstances that allow
one employee... Let's get rid of all the other circumstances. I'm going to give you a pure hypothetical in which they are indistinguishable in every respect. They're quintuplets. they have had exactly the same job for exactly the same period of time. One of them gets a 14-day suspension and says, woohoo, look, lucky me. Whatever happened, I am the beneficiary of a stroke of luck because my four brothers all got removal. Do the four brothers who were removed get to have their penalty reduced to 14 days? And what does the case law tell us about that case?
The case law looks at not only type of conduct, i.e. is it similar? Are the extenuating circumstances similar, which in this hypothetical they're the same, I take it. It also looks to who's the supervisor. That's the court.
They've got the same supervisor.
They're the same
I'm trying to sort of filter this down to ask you, the question I'm asking is, what do we mean when we say in the case law that disparate penalty is a basis for a reduction in the severity of the sanction? Does that mean that if there really is no difference between person A and person B, same supervisor, everything, that person A, who got the heavier penalty, is entitled by law to the same penalty that person B got? And if not, then what do we mean when we say disparate penalty is a ground for reduction of your sanction?
If all the circumstances are the same,
yes,
the nature and the facts of the offense,
everything's the same,
the type of offense, but the facts surrounding how the offense was committed, if that's the same, if all the other factors are the same, i.e. performance record, length of time with the institution, supervisor, if everything's the same.
Trust me, I'm going to say everything's the same in response to every point you raise.
Then yes, that would be a case of disparate treatment.
And the person with the lighter penalty would be entitled to reduction in the penalty.
The person with
the four people who got the four people. I'm sorry. The four brothers who got removed would all be entitled to get the same penalty as the one brother who got a 14-day suspension.
Or the one should be removed, and like the other four. I mean, they should all be treated the same if everything is 100% the same.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that here, nor have we had it in any case that I've seen. Even in cases in which the conduct is considered the same, i.e., in the Gooch case, it's an MSPB case, they were assaults. The employee that was removed had slapped her supervisor. And she, as petitioner, alleged, well, other people assaulted their supervisor at the Postal Service before, and they weren't removed. And the board held, well, even though all these were assaults, per se, by the various petitioners or employees, the type of assault, the circumstances of assault, how the assault was done, was different in the cases. Therefore, it's not disparate treatment. Therefore, the conduct was not similar. Here, we have a completely different set of circumstances than we have with the proposed comparator employee. That employee was within the prison system, working at the prison. An inmate had asked her to read letters that he'd received from a female friend, and the employee did so, and maybe she did it more than once. But here we have a situation that's completely different. In off-duty hours, petitioner called the hotel, asked to speak with an inmate sister. The sister wasn't there. Ms. Brent learned that there was a package waiting for her in the same phone call, so obviously it related to that somehow, or she could have construed that it would have. She went within 15 minutes or a short time later to pick up this package. Again, it was on a Sunday. She was not working. And she didn't report the communication or the receipt of a gift to her supervisor. And the proposed letter of removal and the letter of removal both stressed that you cannot have employees receiving gifts from inmates or their families. Initiating communications is even worse than simply responding to a communication in off-duty hours. And they had no belief and no confidence that she could be rehabilitated. And that's different than the facts set forth in the proposed removal letter of this alleged comparator employee. It's very different. And so the conduct was not similar between the two cases at all.
Do you know offhand of any case in which this court has reversed the board on the ground of disparity in penalty?
I have some cases here, Your Honor, and I can see if they have. Most of the cases I've seen, the court has affirmed the board and in its decision that there was no disparate treatment. Earlier in the 1980s, the issue of comparison employees was not a factor, and that was discussed by this court at length in the, I believe it's the Facer decision. And it was only when the board in the early 80s began saying, okay, let's look at employee B over here and see what they did and compare it to employee A, that, you know, these cases were appealed to this court, and all of a sudden the court was faced with disparate treatment issues. But most of them, this court has found that there was no disparate treatment.
When you say most, is that because you think there are some in which we have sustained a claim of disparate treatment, or because you aren't sure that there are any, but there might be?
The Facer case was vacated and remanded, and that was an Air Force employee who was removed from his mechanic position for use of marijuana.
Uh-huh.
In that case, this court said that an employee can't knowingly be treated different from another employee unless it's justified by the facts. In other words, unless you know there are extenuating circumstances or different enough circumstances that the employees are not comparable. Here you have a situation where the actions of both employees were very different. And I don't know what happened on remand in that case, but that's the case, in fact, that this court speaks about the board's leaning into these inquiries all of a sudden, you know, making extended inquiries into one case while adjudicating another to establish a refutative charge of disparate treatment. And this court stated in that case, it says, the old law was that a person did not have a legally protected interest in the evenness of a misconduct penalty assessed on him with that of others. So it began in the early 80s.
Okay.
And the cases I've seen, with the exception of Facer, all have found that they've strictly construed the term disparate treatment. They've strictly construed the term similar conduct. In other words, not just anything is similar conduct. Even when it's an assault, employee A commits an assault, employee B commits an assault. It depends how the assault was committed. So you have to go past the general term to see the events of the specific misconduct. Right. And that's what seems to be the prevailing standard, well, the board in the Bell case, as well as this court in the Baker case. And for these reasons, based on case law, the conduct was not similar.
Okay, well, thank you for that answer to my question. That helps me. Thank you. Very well.
Your Honor, we respectfully request that the court affirm the decision of the board. Thank you.
Fine. Ms. Harrell, you have some rebuttal time left. Do you care to use it?
Frankly, Your Honor, I think in your questioning probably covers anything. It seems that the only thing we're discussing here, the only issue that we're really addressing today is the disparate treatment argument. And it gets into the facts, as Your Honor pointed out. And I know we're not here to discuss facts, and I hate to keep going into that. The one we talked about the similarities or dissimilarities of the conduct. It's kind of difficult not to discuss the facts. That's the basis of the argument. But what really puzzled me with the situation was when the arbitrator said she found that the employees were not similar. She didn't give any reasoning or state why she found that way. And didn't give us any facts to go on as to what her reasoning was based on. Just that one statement. And then the next statement, she went in and said that she found that there was no disparate impact. I think she just misspoke in that instance. And that word, I think I used the word disparate impact. Because if she didn't, that's also a legal error, because what we were talking about was disparate treatment rather than disparate impact. And in the situation, and I think that's what got us here. But that, and then the board found that there was no evidence to show, and we were like, we presented what evidence the arbitrator had, and the board said we didn't have enough evidence to make a determination on that, so therefore, petitioner, you lose. And we feel that the arbitrator, that we didn't have the facts to evaluate what the arbitrator, what did the arbitrator evaluate? How did the arbitrator make that finding that the employees were not dissimilar? Our position is that if the arbitrator had looked at the facts and made a finding, our position is that maybe the arbitrator would have found that this particular conduct was similar. I mean, opposing counsel says what we're looking at is these were two individuals who did have improper relationships and improper contact with an inmate. They're not 100% mirror image similar. Most instances of these instances aren't. But there's improper relations with an inmate. And what really we find egregious is that one employee was specifically told not to do this, and that this employee did it again on more than one occasion, and that employee was allowed to keep her job. We don't understand how the agency could properly evaluate these employees under the Douglas factors and come to two different conclusions respect to the salvageability of these employees and their potential to continue to work in the workforce. And we just feel like our position is that there was disparate treatment here, that the arbitrator did not correctly make findings on this particular issue, and that was error on the part of the arbitrator, and we're urging the board to reverse based on the disparate treatment that we see and the failure of the arbitrator to adequately and factually address that issue and let us know what factors she was using to make that decision. Because otherwise, we see that as an arbitrary and capricious decision. We see no facts on which she based that decision. And the board itself said they saw no facts to evaluate that on either.
Very well. Thank you for your argument, Ms. Harrell, and thank you, Ms. Moore. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next.